Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 202, Exploring Holosync with Bill Harris. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
The message I have for people is that really the solution to life's problems is awareness. Almost anything in life that isn't working can be traced back to the fact that the part of you that's generating it is out of your awareness. And what happens is that when you become aware of these things, what happens is a part of you that you don't even need to do anything about knows what is resourceful and what isn't resourceful, and the unresourceful things fall away. And even if a person is already functional, you can become dramatically more functional as your awareness of how you're creating what's going on in your life increases. And so we provide, number one, a tool, a holosync, that dramatically increases awareness, and then we show people where to direct that awareness.
That was the voice of my guest, Bill Harris. A graduate of Portland State University, Bill has 3 years of graduate study in music, studying with world-renowned Czech composer Tomas Svoboda and Spanish composer Salvador Brotons. He is a certified trainer of neuro-linguistic programming and is trained in Ericksonian hypnosis. He's a longtime student of contemporary psychology, quantum mechanical physics, the evolution of nonlinear systems, chaos theory, and the effects of a wide range of neurotechnologies on human change, evolution, and healing. He's known for his ability to explain difficult subjects in a way that makes them easy to understand. Bill is frequently invited to speak at scientific and transformational forums and conferences across the U.S., and over the years has taught a wide range of workshops and seminars. In the past, he's conducted his own private therapy practice utilizing cognitive psychology and NLP. Bill is currently president and director of Centerpoint Research Institute. Bill started Centerpoint Research Institute in 1989 with borrowed recording equipment set up on his own kitchen table. As of 2007, hundreds of thousands of people in over 172 countries on 6 continents had used Centerpoint programs to improve their lives. In his role as director of Centerpoint Research Institute, Bill is the creator of the Holosync Solution Program and the Life Principles Integration Process. The Holosync Solution Program utilizes Centerpoint's proprietary Holosync sound technology embedded beneath soothing music and environmental sounds to induce deep meditative states, causing the brain to reorganize at higher levels of functioning. The Life Principles Integration Process is designed to help people discover how they unconsciously create their internal states and external results, and show them how to take control of these internal processes to create whatever they want in life. Bill is a member of the Advisory Board of Self-Enhancement, Inc., an organization helping inner-city young people. He is also a founding member of the Transformational Leadership Council, started by best-selling Chicken Soup for the Soul author Jack Canfield. Bill is a private pilot and CEO of Mercury Aviation. He has played saxophone, flute, clarinet, and piano professionally for over 40 years. He lives in Hillsboro, Oregon. Now, here's the interview. Bill Harris, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
You bet.
Well, to give you a little background behind this invitation, one of my best friends has been using Holosync for a number of years, so as a regular part of his meditation, and I've heard from a few listeners who are equally enthusiastic, And one of my recent shrink wrap radio guests has spoken very enthusiastically about it. And as a result of that interview, one of my listeners has started the program and is filing periodic audio reports on the show on his progress. I've borrowed a copy of the level one from my friend, but I've only spent a little time with it. So given the buzz I've heard about Holosync, I thought I should have you on as a guest.
Well, you do now. Here I am.
Okay. Well, let's start with some personal background. Who is Bill Harris?
Oh, gee. Well, I don't know. There's so many things I could tell you. Are you mostly interested in as it pertains to Holosync?
Yeah, I probably so, yes. I didn't mean to ask such a large metaphysical question.
I was born at a very early age. And, well, I grew up in a broken home and with, you know, a fairly dysfunctional family. And I was a very angry person, actually. Huh. And when I wasn't angry, I was depressed. I was very, very good at school and a lot of other things, but I was very unhappy. And so when I was 19, I started to meditate and read books about Eastern philosophy and also Western psychology, and became a very disciplined meditator. And though it certainly was helpful, 16 years later, when I was 35, I was still very angry. My relationships didn't work. I was difficult to get along with, angry, depressed, and so on. And one day someone gave me a cassette tape that they said had something on it that changed the electrical patterns in your brain to correspond to those of meditation. And I just thought, well, this is probably bullshit. Some meditation master or enlightened person would have already done this if it was possible. And so I just put it in my pocket, and I didn't really listen to it or anything. Then I put the same jacket on several months later and put my hands in the pocket, and you know how you do that, and there's something in the pocket, and you think, well, what's this? And I took it out, and I think, oh, yeah, it's this meditation scam. But I listened to it, and it was about 10 minutes long, and it really blew me away. I had a better meditation in those 10 minutes than what usually would happen in an hour on a really good day. So I started investigating this, and what I found was that in the 1970s, a number of scientists were studying the electrical brainwave patterns created by people who were experienced meditators. So by the end of the 1970s, they knew quite a lot about that. Then, completely independently of that, a researcher at Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York, a man named Dr. Gerald Oster, published a paper in Scientific American in October of 1973 called Auditory Beats in the Brain. And this, essentially what this article did is it described a way, using very precise combinations of pure sine wave tones delivered to the brain through, you know, to each ear through stereo headphones, you could change brainwave patterns. And this article had described no use for this whatsoever. It was a very abstruse article for anyone that's ever read scientific journals at all. It reminded me of an article like how such and such a chemical crosses the blood-brain barrier in the adolescent salamander.
Right.
I mean, something that nobody would read or have any interest in unless they were in a specific field already. Apparently a few other people besides me also made this connection, because I wasn't the only one doing this, but I probably was the one that stuck with this the longest, because CenterPoint has become, you know, quite big international company. So anyway, what I did was saying, gee, these are the brainwave patterns of meditation, and this is a way to change brainwave patterns or put a person into any brainwave pattern, what would happen if we, you know, if we used this? So with a couple of friends, I, you know, borrowed some equipment from the engineering lab at the University of Portland, where I was a graduate student in music composition at the time, and began making these, at the time, cassette tapes. And we began using them to meditate, and it just blew our minds what happened. We couldn't believe how profound the meditative states were that we were experiencing. We were starting to experience things we had read about in various books, but had only either never had happened or had just had a little glimpse of for a very short while in a really, you know, on one of those days we're having a really good meditation.
Well, for example, what kind of experiences are you talking about?
Oh, experiences where an hour goes by and it seems like 2 minutes, where you feel like you completely lose awareness of your body. You feel like you're kind of simultaneously infinitely large and infinitely small at the same time, or you're just kind of pure awareness floating in a ocean of nothingness.
Okay, well, those are dramatic signs.
There are tons of things that can happen. There are certain visual things that happen in deep meditation. There's no set thing that always happens when you're meditating, but there's all kinds of things that begin to come out of the unconscious mind when you open it up by meditating. And many yogis and enlightened guys and different people have written books, and there are ancient scriptures that describe some of these things too. And so when people start to get interested in this, often they will read such books, and it describes all this amazing stuff, and then you sit down to meditate because you think, wow, that sounds cool. And actually what happens is you're sitting there and you're thinking about, you know, what you're going to buy at the grocery store when you're done, and what's that noise out there, and my leg itches, and it's not very profound at all. And, you know, what they don't say in the books is that often these things are happening after 20 or 30 years of doing this hours a day and so on. That's one of the great things about Holosync, which is what I ultimately named the way that I do this technology, is that it allows you to meditate at the same depth as someone who has been practicing. In fact, even deeper, really, because the brainwave patterns we can take you into are things that only happen momentarily to the most advanced meditators. So at any rate, I mean, it really speeds up the process because let me finish. I'm starting to try to say three things at the same time.
I do that frequently.
It really allows you to accelerate the process because you start off being an advanced meditator, essentially. The point I want to make, though, is that though there are some pretty amazing experiences that happen from time to time when you do something like this, the experiences are really beside the point. I mean, they kind of tell you, wow, something really is happening. It is amazing when you sit down, put in one of these Holosync CDs, put on headphones, and then do the meditation session, how dramatically something on a CD can change your state. But it's really not the momentary experience, although it's often very pleasant and quite amazing, it's really the long-term changes. Because what happened is that over the time between 1985 and 1989, during which time the circle of people that were using this grew to 100, 150 people or so, as we just began having other friends and friends of friends and so on start to use this, and they were all having the same kinds of experiences that the original two or three of us were having. I completely changed. My anger subsided. My depression went away. people began to come up to me that hadn't seen me for a while and say, "What have you been doing? You seem so mellow." Huh. No one had ever accused me of being mellow before.
Okay.
I was an angry little shit, actually, so anyway, it really had a profound effect on the quality of my life, my sense of well-being, my sense of who I was, my clarity of mind, all kinds of emotional problems, diminished and many of them completely subsided. And so at a certain point, other people began to say to me, "Well, you should create a structured way to use this and sell it." And so in 1989, I created this little company on my kitchen table. It was actually on the kitchen table that we had had in my family when I grew up, which I had in a room in my basement. So that was sort of my office, and I kept track of the customers in a little plastic recipe box. Because I didn't know anything about computers.
That's great.
I mean, this was in 89. There were, the computers weren't like they are today anyway. But, and then I just gradually learned more about marketing, which I now know quite a bit about, and about running a business and so on. And to sort of fast forward to today, we have about 750,000 people using this in 173 countries, and it's also used by Zen masters and Zen monks and most of the prominent spiritual teachers, certainly in the West, and many of them in Europe also, and most of the top personal growth teachers, too. So it's become quite a phenomenon.
Yeah, that's got to be very gratifying. How would you refer to this category? I mean, sometimes the term I've used is brain drivers. How do you mentioned that there are other people who've done similar things. What's your label for the category?
Well, some people call it neurotechnology. I have to say that, there are other people that make CDs or machines or whatever that change brainwave patterns. And some of them are doing this to create meditative states. Some of, you can also create brainwave patterns of super learning, creativity, and many other states. It's not just meditation, but that's what I was most interested in. The difference, I think, and I'm sort of tooting my own horn here a little bit to say this, but the difference between what we do and what some of the other people, I mean, we're probably 10 times bigger than everybody else put together that is doing this, and part of the reason is because what we do really works, and it works a lot better. And I think that's because at this point I have 40 years of meditation behind me. I'm extremely well versed in both intellectually and now certainly experientially in all the meditative lore, all the Eastern philosophy stuff and everything. And for some reason, I just intuitively knew how to do this, how to what frequencies to use, how to advance people from something to something stronger to something stronger in a certain way, because people tell us all the time that, well, they tried this and they tried that and they tried this and they've tried most of what's out there, and they always end up with us. The other thing is that we provide a actually quite stunning amount of support and information and hand-holding as people go through this process. And really, there's nobody else out there that really knows how to do that, because they don't really understand the process that you go through when you do this, because they haven't gone through it themselves. I mean, you go through the same process if you really become a serious meditator. It's just a slower process. And And that sort of segues into maybe the next thing that I would say about this, which is that when we're growing up, in order to deal with our family, in order to be okay with our parents, there are certain things that all parents tell their children is different in each family, are not okay, that are bad, that are wrong. And so everyone suppresses certain aspects of being human because in the society and the family they're in, it's not okay. A common example is anger. It's not good form to be angry. So a lot of people kind of disown anger, and a lot of people disown fear. A lot of people are told in their family, don't show your feelings, or don't want something, or don't show off, we could make an endless list, actually, of the things parents say to kids, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. I have an exercise in one of the courses that I teach where people make such a list, and it's almost heartbreaking to see how almost every human being, when they start to think about it, was given a giant list of all this stuff. So, at any rate, there's all these things that we're all taught, and are usually largely unaware of this, that are not okay, that are wrong, that are bad. So we repress that stuff. When you start doing something like meditation, and the same thing happens in therapy, too, if you go to a therapist, the stuff that you've put out of your awareness, which is almost always the quote-unquote bad stuff, you start to become aware of it. Holosync really, if I had to put it in one word, it's what it does. It creates awareness. I guess that's two words, but it really dramatically increases your awareness, and one of the things you become aware of is all that stuff that you've disowned and repressed. And the thing is that if you could really disown this stuff and really get rid of it, that might be one thing, but actually you can't. It leaks out anyway. And the more repressed it is, the more it leaks out in dysfunctional ways. And so if someone disowns anger, for instance, just to give an example of this, then they will, first of all, be really bugged by angry people. And they will attract lots of them and see them everywhere. And they will be angry too, but they will either do it in a kind of passive-aggressive way, or they'll feel, if they do it in a more overt way, they'll feel really justified that they're angry. All those other people out there that are angry are assholes, but I have a good reason for being angry, and it's somebody else's fault, because they've disowned their anger. So it comes out anyway. People that disown fear end up being afraid of fear.
Let me bring you back to holosync, because I totally agree with what you're saying.
This is really about holosync, because what I'm saying is that when you use holosync, you start to become aware of all this stuff.
Okay.
And it can be intense, but it's good that you're becoming aware of it, because when you become aware of it, instead of it being repressed, you become aware of it, it matures. Because, you see, there's a role that anger has in a mature sense, because you might be, it's like tough love or something, or the person that's able to make a decision that needs to be made for the good of everyone. Whereas when it's repressed, it just comes out as you being an asshole, and everybody sees you're angry but you. Fear has a role, too, because it kind of sounds the alarm when there's something wrong that you need to do something about. And every negative thing that people have suppressed, once it's sort of out of the basement, it matures into something very positive. So what happens when people do holosync is that all that stuff gets transmuted into what is positive.
Okay.
And it stops leaking out and appear. Most of people's problems, reoccurring problems in their life, are because of this repressed, disowned stuff. And so holosync clears that up. And amazingly, stuff that had been, going on, like my anger and depression and difficulty getting along with people and difficulty in relationships and all that stuff clears up. All the ways people are unknowingly sabotaging themselves begins to clear up. And it's quite amazing how that happens. But because that stuff that when you first become aware of it, it's the very stuff that you really think is wrong, you often resist it. And for that reason, we have extensive support, because people don't at first get what's happening and how to deal with it. The same thing happens in traditional meditation too, and the same thing happens in therapy. It just happens on steroids with Holosync. And it takes you through dealing with all that stuff in record time.
Okay. When I listen to Holosync, what I hear are chimes and bells, and then in a later segment I hear rain. Is there some other sound under that subliminally or something else that's going on other than what I think I'm listening to?
Well, what you're hearing is really largely cosmetic. When you're listening to the first half hour soundtrack called The Dive, you're listening to these crystal bowls, which I'm playing with mallets, and then some rain. And I chose that because there's really no melody to grab onto. I mean, it is melodic and pleasant, but there's no tune to catch onto. There's no rhythm to catch onto. So it sort of allows you to just kind of float away into the meditative state. And then the second half hour, which we call immersion, is just the rain alone. And that even more so allows you to just really disappear into this other state. But underneath that are these Holosync tones. There's no talking or subliminal information or anything like that. It's these pure sine wave tones, which in certain combinations, there are these two little organelles in the brain called the olivary nuclei, one on each side of the brain. And somehow these two little organelles are hearing these tones, and they are not the same. And in order to reconcile this slight difference between these tones, it creates a standing wave in the brain, in the electrical patterns in the brain, and the brain begins to resonate to that. And depending on which tones we use, we can regulate what that is. And so one of the ways to describe what's happening is that we're giving the brain a stimulus that it cannot handle the way it's currently structured. And so in order to handle it, the brain creates new neural pathways, new neural connections between the left and the right side of the brain, which creates what scientists call whole brain functioning or whole brain thinking. And really what it, well, first of all, this is a lot like exercising, in the sense that when you, I don't know, lift weights or go running or something like that, you're giving your body a stimulus it can't handle the way it's currently structured, and your brain, your body then creates a new structure that can handle it, which we call getting in shape. Sure. And the same thing happens in the brain. I mean, any kind of a stimulus you give to your brain or your body, your body will do whatever it can to, or your brain will do whatever it can to adapt to it. So that's what happens. And so,
have you or anyone else done EEG studies to see if, in fact, you're seeing different patterns of brain waves as a result of someone?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, on our website, there's a section where there's some articles, and one of them is called the Science Behind Holosync and Other Neurotechnologies. I think that's the title of it, and it goes into that in a lot of detail. What happens is that most people are there's four categories of brainwaves. There's actually a few other things, but there's four main categories of brainwaves. The fastest is called beta. And
yes,
in the higher reaches of beta, people are actually feel anxious and uneasy. They feel very isolated and separated, and There are certain emotions that are kind of correlated with this: fear, anger, sadness, alienation, anxiety, things like that. Then as the brain waves slow down into the lower parts of beta, that's where people do things that are focused attention, you know, figuring things out, doing a math problem, linear thinking, all that sort of thing.
Right.
And most people are most of the time in the lower part of a beta brainwave pattern, which is where most people are just, they're sort of daily going about their business. Then if the brainwave pattern slows a little more, you go into alpha. And alpha is associated with increased learning ability. It's associated with greater intuition. It's associated with feelings of happiness and joy. When you are really focused absorption in something, like when you're reading a book and you get so absorbed in it that you kind of block out the rest of the room and you're really in the book, or you know, same thing with a movie or a TV show or something, that is at the higher levels of alpha. When you get down to the lower parts of alpha, that's kind of pre-sleep or pre-waking drowsiness, kind of when you're you know, when you're just falling asleep, but you're not really asleep yet, you're still aware, or you're just waking up, but you're not quite awake yet, but you're not asleep anymore. That's kind of an alpha state. And alpha is also the brainwave pattern of most meditation. When most people are sitting down to meditate, they're making alpha waves. If the brain slows more, it goes into a theta brainwave pattern, which is the brainwave pattern of dreaming sleep. It's also this brainwave pattern when people are meditating and they have visionary experiences. It's called a hypnagogic state. It's also you make bursts of theta waves when you go, aha, because you've seen a connection. When you learn and you have that moment of learning where you get it, you make bursts of theta waves at that moment. Theta is also associated with creativity, with intuition, with a greater contact with the unconscious mind. And then the slowest brainwave pattern is delta. And delta is dreamless sleep, is the way most people would experience it. But very, very advanced meditators are able to make delta waves while they are awake. Really what they're doing is making delta, and they're making a little bit of beta and alpha at the same time. But people who can make lots of waking delta, if you went to a hospital to their EEG lab where they use that to diagnose people who have brain problems, they would say if you were making a lot of waking delta that you had a problem with your brain. But my good friend Dr. James Hart, who's probably the greatest expert in the world on brainwave biofeedback, tells me that the people that he has worked with who could make lots of waking delta were, number one, extremely persuasive, almost spellbindingly persuasive, and also that this is correlated with what in Eastern philosophy they call a kundalini awakening, this energy that's supposed to be at the base of the spine,
yes.
Dormant, that when you meditate, it rises up the spine and it pierces through these different chakras and different abilities and awarenesses are opened up and so on and so forth. So at any rate, these, in addition to what I've already said about these brainwave patterns, there's something else interesting about them, and that is when you're making lots of beta, the fastest one, the one that's associated with dis-ease and anxiety and so on, and in its extremes, one of the hemispheres of the brain is very dominant over the other, something they call brain lateralization. So you might be very left brain dominant, which would mean that you're very externally oriented, very objectively oriented. Your attention is on out there. Or you could be very extremely right brain dominant, where your attention is internal, subjective. The extreme of that is autism, where an autistic person is so internally oriented that someone can come up behind an autistic child and clap their hands right behind their head really loud, and they won't even turn to see what it is. They're just not oriented externally very much. So at any rate, when you're as you go from beta to alpha to theta to delta, that lateralization, that extreme dominance of one hemisphere over the other, which is associated with feelings of separation and those emotions that kind of go along with it, the brain begins to synchronize. The hemispheres begin to synchronize. The brain becomes more coherent, is one of the one of the words they use. And as that happens, you go from seeing how everything is separate and feeling the emotions associated with that, which are generally unpleasant, to seeing more and more how things go together, how things are connected. And the extreme of that is this feeling that a lot of people have heard about or read about, where you experience yourself as being one with everything, where everything is so much connected in your experience that there's just one thing and you're it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when people meditate, that's why people have those experiences, is because the brain gradually becomes more and more and more coherent until that is the predominant experience. And as that happens, people feel happiness, joy, connection, empathy, compassion, all kinds of things like that. And it becomes all about us. And
I've got a bunch of other questions that I'd like to get to here. A couple of them are a little bit critical. You know, some listeners are going to wonder if it's all placebo effect. Do you care, or do you have evidence that something more specific is going on?
Well, I suppose you could say it's placebo effect, except that people. I don't think that it is, but people experience many, many things that they never expected they would experience, first of all. People also have experiences that are so profound and changes that are so dramatic. I mean, we have people that have been in therapy for 20 years and have had no progress, and then they do this for a while, and all this stuff changes.
Okay.
So if it's a placebo effect, it's sure a damn
it's a good one. That's why I said, do you care? Because with all the glowing reports that you're getting, I mean, there's a level at which it might not even matter if it were placebo.
I don't think there's any way it could be a placebo effect, given how profound. I mean, this doesn't sound to me like anything I've ever read about a placebo effect. It's rare that anybody doesn't have profound changes from this, and the few people that don't, there's a reason why they don't.
Well, maybe you could just kind of give me a thumbnail sketch of what that reason would be.
Well, usually those people have been very abused growing up, and
so maybe they're not ready to confront the scary spaces that might open up in the process for them during the holosync meditation.
Well, I don't know if that's exactly it. Really, what it is, people tend to see this as sort of a magic bullet. Okay, all I have to do is put on these headphones, listen to this, and all this stuff will change. And to a degree, that's true. What happens is you become much more aware, and you become aware of ways you've been doing things that have been screwing you up. And as you see yourself doing it, you just can't keep doing it anymore. And so all kinds of stuff falls away. And so even without anything that I would tell somebody about how to work with this whole situation, and I didn't have anybody telling me anything, and it profoundly changed me, certainly. But there's a basic premise that people have to buy into for any kind of change to work, not just this, and that is that people have to buy into the fact that somehow, even if I don't know what it is, there's something I do inside that generates my feelings, my behaviors, the kind of people and situations I find myself attracted to, and the kind of people and situations that are attracted to me, that find me attractive. Most people think that an experience happens out there, and then I experience a response. A response is created. You insult me, and then I am angry. And I'm angry because you insulted me. But there's a step in between, and that is what you do with it inside. There's a whole range of cognitive processes, internal cognitive processes, that people go through, which are operating unconsciously. And as long as they're operating unconsciously, then you automatically react to the experiences in your life. As you become aware of these internal cognitive processes, then they become a choice. So the thing is that if you insulted me in some way and I got angry, it's because of something I did inside. I could just as easily have another response. If I see myself doing that and I don't like the feeling of being angry, I'll just stop doing it. But if I can't see myself doing it, it'll just seem like it just happens to me. So the people that come to us that nothing happens for them, they've also tried 50 other personal growth programs, and they come to us saying, nothing works for me. And the reason nothing works for them is because they haven't bought into the fact that there's something they're doing that is creating their life. And it's unconscious, they haven't figured it out yet, but you can't really figure it out. You don't even try to figure it out until you realize that there is something you're doing. Until, as long as it's unconscious, it seems like the world is doing it to you.
Yeah.
And if people really hang on to that idea, very often they just stay stuck. So there are a few people that come to us like that, and we do our best to kind of get them to buy into this premise. Like, okay, I don't know what it is, certainly not anything I'm doing on purpose, but there's something I'm doing inside that causes me to feel this way, that causes me to behave this way or fail to behave in the way that I want to, that causes me to get attracted to certain situations, that causes certain people to, you know, end up in my orbit, and so on. And usually that is the coming from the fact that when they were growing up, they had to construct the way they respond to things in a certain way. Usually they had to say, there's a lot of danger in this family, and I need to watch out for it. And so they're focusing on avoiding danger. To do that, you have to picture danger in your mind a lot. You have to make internal pictures of danger and say, I don't want that. So unfortunately, the way the brain works is that whatever you predominantly focus on, you tend to attract or create more of it. And you also, if you focus on something you don't want, you pretty quickly feel bad.
Yes.
So somebody that does that, they feel bad a lot, and they keep attracting people and situations into their life that help them to be right. That, yes, indeed, it's a dangerous world, and it's full of assholes, and people will take advantage of you, and people will hurt you, and so on. And what I'm trying to get them to see is that that's something that they're doing inside is really why the people they get involved with, the situations they get involved with, are different than the ones that someone else who's having a great life gets involved with. And they had to do that when they were growing up, because it was really dangerous when they were growing up. They'll just generalize that to the whole world, and then they'll cherry pick the people and situations out of the whole world that helped them be right about that.
Sure, sure.
So it's the awareness that you're doing that to yourself, and that's an extreme case of it, but I mean, that's the awareness of how you're generating all this stuff that's happening in your life. When you do that, a kind of a general principle is that you can do what is not resourceful over and over for your entire life as long as you do it unconsciously. But do it with awareness, and you won't be able to keep doing it. If you watch yourself, if you watch these internal cognitive processes, and see exactly how you're doing feeling guilty, let's say, then there's a part of you that says, that's not very resourceful. There's no benefit to that, and it just falls away. You don't even need to try to make it go away. And that's kind of what happens with HoloSync. You just become more and more aware of how you're doing things that you thought were just happening to you, and as that happens, the things that aren't resourceful just automatically fall away.
Let me get in some more questions before we run out of time. In my effort to get some background for this interview, I went on YouTube and I found a number of video segments devoted to HoloSync, as I suspected I might. There were several testimonials. I even found one or two that you had created. However, I also found one that made a disturbing accusation that HoloSync soundtrack is nothing more than a reproduction lifted from a $16 CD titled Harmonic Planet Volume 2, and I want to give you a chance to comment on that.
That it's a reproduction of a $16 soundtrack called Harmonic?
Yeah, have you seen this on YouTube?
Oh, I've never heard of Harmonic Planet, so, I'll bet that if you've researched whatever Harmonic Planet is, that that it's something that is maybe happened in the last year or so, that it's very new, that in fact it's the other way around, that they're trying to copy something I'm doing rather than the other.
Huh.
And, this is sort of like saying that somebody that sets up a shop to change oil is copying some other shop that changes oil.
Okay, I thought maybe there was a possibility.
This type of technology, as Oster explains it in this paper, is in the public domain. Anybody can use it.
Yeah.
It's just that I know how to use it in a way. I have expertise and experience and a giant laboratory of people who have been using this now for 20-some years. I just happen to know way more about this than any of these other little people that are, out there using it. And they're all trying to sort of piggyback on us in some way or compare themselves to us. And God bless them. If they can sell some of what they're doing, that's great. But
I'm glad you had a chance to speak to that.
It's absolutely absurd when some little guy has something he'd made in his garage and now he's saying that what I do is a copy of that.
Yeah. I looked for it on iTunes, but I couldn't find it. I've got some questions that listeners have submitted. I let people know I was going to be talking to you. One is from my good friend, Dr. Dale Ironson, who's been using your CDs for several years, and he wanted me to ask you to comment on Dr. James Hart's bio-cybernaut training. He's under the impression that a lot of HoloSync students go on to do that program. Do you have any comments about that for my friend?
I mentioned Jim Hart earlier when I was talking about the Delta
brainwave. Yeah, I didn't recognize that was the same person, right?
Jim is a mad scientist, in a way. I mean, Jim has a PhD from Carnegie Mellon University, and he has dozens and dozens of peer-reviewed articles in scientific journals and so on. But he is kind of a mad scientist, you might say. And he has a way of using biofeedback to teach people how to create various brainwave patterns. And the ones he's interested in mostly have to do with various spiritual states, you might say, or meditative states, I guess. And so he has these trainings where you go in and go into a soundproof booth, and he's got these giant rows of all these computers and these algorithms that he's created to do this in a certain way, and people learn how to make alpha rhythms in certain parts of the brain, and then he has a few levels of doing that, and then he has a theta brainwave training that you can move to after that, and then a delta brainwave training. You may have more than one theta brainwave training, but at any rate, through a series of circumstances, I met him. He offered to have me come and take his training, and so I was interested. I went and did it. I thought it was amazing, and I then recommended it to Centerpoint people, and quite a number of them did go take it. It's very expensive. It's $15,000 for training.
Oh my goodness!
He was at one point giving people from Centerpoint a 20% discount on it. I don't know if he's still doing that or not, which I think made it $12,500. But I don't think anybody complained about it. I mean, it is a lot of money, and obviously, if you don't have the money, it's too much if you don't have the money.
Right.
But it's quite a dramatic transformation that happens from doing this. And he's a very sweet man, a very interesting guy, and a very brilliant guy. If somebody wants to know more about BioCybernaut, they should just go to BioCybernaut.com and look at it.
Right.
It's expensive, but it's certainly pretty amazing. When I met him, he's been doing this for 30 years or something, but the number of people that had been through this training was, I don't know if I'm completely accurate, but it was, 1,000 or 2,000 or something like that. And I said, Jim, this is pretty amazing. More people should be doing this. I also encouraged them to figure out a way to make it less expensive, but it involves some really specialized equipment and, not just anybody can lead people through this thing. So it is what it is. But anyway, I did send him a lot of people because I really thought it was.
You provide your program on CDs. I tend to listen to all my audio on my iPod. Would it lose its effectiveness if I convert it to MP3 format for listening on the iPod with stereo earbuds?
Most people do that. Technically, it does when you do that, it does lose some of the highs and some of the lows, I understand, because you have to compress it. The best way is to do it, put it into MP3 format without compressing it, if you can. But that makes it a really big file. I don't compress it, and I listen to it on my iPod, and it seems to work the same. So we have geeks here that say you shouldn't do that, but I'm not sure I agree with them, just from my own personal experience.
Okay. Well, I know you're not a psychotherapist, but I wonder if you have any observations in relation to psychotherapy and various psychological conditions about the effectiveness of Holosync and how it compares maybe to things like psychotherapy, EMDR, EFT, hypnosis, and so on. Do you have any comments about that?
Well, all those things you're listing have various degrees of effectiveness, and some of them are very dependent on the person who is doing them, because some of this stuff is somewhat of an art. Certainly doing some sort of therapy or some sort of therapeutic interaction with someone is part art, and it has to do with the skill level of the person doing it. When you're doing therapy with someone, you really are trying to get at things that people are doing that are out of their awareness, and that's the same thing that Holosync kind of gets to. The therapist is acting in some ways as a mirror to the client because they see things that the other person doesn't see. A good spiritual teacher does the same thing.
Do you think the two could work synergistically together, therapy and Holosync at the same time?
I'll tell you that we have thousands of therapists that use Holosync and recommend it to their clients.
Mm-hmm.
Universally, what they say is that there is a distinct difference between the people that they see who use Holosync and those who don't. That the people who are using Holosync progress way faster than the people who are not using Holosync, because Holosync creates a really dramatic awareness. And so when people begin to see, what they're doing to be neurotic or what they're doing to be whatever, it just begins to fall away. And so it, in fact, if someone is going to school and they're using Holosync, school seems to go faster. If, you know, almost anything you're doing, if you're using Holosync, somehow you do it more effectively. You learn it faster. You get it faster. But certainly therapy works. I've had thousands of letters from people saying, I got more from 6 months of the beginning of your program than the last 15 years I've had of therapy that cost me $20,000. We've also had plenty of people who have been on anxiety medication and depression medication for years and years, and after 10 or 12 months of Holosync, were able to get off it because they didn't need it anymore.
That's great.
I'm not suggesting that people throw away their medication or that people do not go see, you know, seek therapy, because I'm not saying this is a substitute for therapy. I think therapy is, I used to have a therapeutic practice, and I think therapy can be very valuable. And there are some people who I think should only do Holosync if they are seeing some sort of a therapist. And there are some people who need to see a therapist before they do Holosync. I mean, I'm talking about people that are have really, really serious mental health problems, because Holosync might be too intense for them.
Yes.
Such people often have some of this buried stuff that I talked about, and it's really, really intense stuff. And although we provided very expert support, we don't, you know, we don't claim to be, you know, psychologists or psychiatrists, or that we're going to work with personality disordered people.
You mentioned support a few times. What form does that support take?
Well, when people join the program, first of all, they receive a series of follow-up support letters that come every 2 weeks for the first 6 months. Very early on, they get a copy of my first book, Thresholds of the Mind. They also get a series of talks that I gave at Centerpoint Retreats. There's all kinds of other material that we provide that is support/education about what's likely to happen, why it happens, how to deal with it to get the most benefit, and so on. Then we have a staff of follow-up support coaches, kind of a telephone hotline that people can call anytime, as much as they want, from I think it's 9:30 to 5, Monday through Friday. And I'm actually right now working on a four-lesson online course that everyone will get when they start using Holosync. Four lessons that each include a free coaching session also, but that probably won't launch for another month or something like that. Generally, what we do is, you know, provide lots of written material, and I also have a blog that has, you know, I don't know, 40 or 50 at this point, very full-length articles about all this kind of stuff that people find very helpful. But we provide telephone support and written support and a lot of information.
Okay, well, that's great.
About the process you go through.
As we wind down, I wonder if there are any final thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with.
Well, I guess, you know, the message I have for people is that really the solution to life's problems is awareness. Almost anything in life that isn't working can be traced back to the fact that the part of you that's generating it is out of your awareness. And what happens is that when you become aware of these things, what happens is a part of you that you don't even need to do anything about knows what is resourceful and what isn't resourceful, and the unresourceful things fall away. And there's no reason that anyone has to live a life where they're unsuccessful, where they're unhappy, where life is miserable and unhappy. And even if the person is already functional, you can become dramatically more functional as your awareness of how you're creating what's going on in your life increases. And so we provide, number one, a tool, a HoloSync, that dramatically increases awareness, and then we show people where to direct that awareness. What are the parts of you inside that actually create how you feel, how you behave, the people and situations that you find yourself in?
That's an excellent wrap-up. So, Bill Harris, you've been very gracious with your time, and thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, it's my pleasure. And by the way, if anybody would like to try HoloSync, if you go to centerpoint.com, you can get a free HoloSync demo CD and a free special report that tells all about it. And there's tons of more information on the website about it, too. And they just need to know how to spell Centerpoint, which is CENTERPOINTE. The word center, the word point, with an E on the end of point.com.
Okay, I've already sent off for mine, so that's good to know.
Okay, well, it was my pleasure to talk to you, and I hope this was beneficial to people.
And there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Bill Harris. For all the attention I've been giving to HoloSync, I should hasten to let you know that they are not a sponsor, nor do I have any financial interest in the company. That having been said, I think the incredible success of this program and the rave reviews I've heard from people I know and trust makes it worth looking into here. If you are interested to give it a try for yourself, they do send out a free introductory CD. Be sure to let me know what happens for you if you follow up on this.
I've been laying on this couch, babe. I've been laying here so long. Just waiting for Dr. Dave, babe, to play his shrink wrap radio song. Oh, he plays it so sweet, and he plays it so warm. Shrink wrap radio, it's a harbor from the storm. You know he speaks to your mind, babe, but he's really speaking to your soul. Talking shrink wrap radio, babe. You know that's just the way that he rolls. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, babe, it's all in your mind. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, it's all in your mind.
Yes, sirree, Bob. Ever wonder why so many young people engage in cutting themselves? Be sure to check out my other podcast series at wisecounselpodcast.com, where there's an interview with Berent Walsh, PhD, on the nature and treatment of self-injury. I think you'll like it. Please remember to tell your friends, colleagues, family, and so on about Shrink Wrap Radio, and I really appreciate it when you mention it on your blog, Facebook, or Twitter. I've been gathering more friends on Twitter. You can follow my tweets at twitter.com/shrinkwrapradio. And if you haven't done so already, please add yourself to our Frapper map. You'll find a link on our site, or you can simply go to frappr.com/shrinkwrapradio. Remember, Shrink Wrap Radio is part of the ProMed Network and also sciencepodcasters.org. By the way, if you're not subscribed to Shrink Wrap Radio, it costs you nothing to do so. It just means the episodes get automatically delivered to you, and it does help me to track our audience size. The easiest way to subscribe is through iTunes, and there is a subscription link to iTunes in the right-hand gutter area of the Shrink Wrap Radio website. And also, if you haven't taken our survey, there's a link to our listener survey on the site, and you will get a free gift if you complete the survey, so I hope you will. Speaking of iTunes, if you love this show and you haven't posted a review on iTunes, please do so. That's one of the things that keeps us on the front page of their higher education page. Also, if you haven't made a donation, please consider doing so. It's also helpful as your patronage of our sponsors using the discount links on our site for GoDaddy, PetMeds.com, Brookstone, and Budget Car Rentals. You'll find a big green donate button on our site along with links to our sponsors.
Hi, this is Kira Van Nuys Martin, and you're on the couch with my dad, Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Kira, mother of my two beautiful granddaughters. Well, let's hear what our listener community has to say by dipping into the old mailbag. Dear Dr. Van Nuys, I hope this isn't inappropriate. I've listened to Shrink Wrap Radio for a little while now and have found it to be incredibly helpful and generally fun to listen to. Wonderful. On listening to it, I've come to think that you might be able to give me some insight into two questions that I have. I'll pose the questions first and then provide background information after that. Any and all help you could provide would be greatly appreciated. Questions. 1. How does someone with non-psychology / medical degrees make the switch over into therapy? And 2. Can you recommend any books on the topic of arrogance? And then the person goes on to give their background. Says, background, 1, I've been considering for a while making the switch into therapy as a career. I got my BS in computer science from Georgia Tech, and I finished my MBA in May. I've always been the amateur therapist who helped others figure out how to resolve interpersonal and personal problems. You could say that coaching is a passion and a skill of mine. As of a year ago, I started to put more real research into this and now average about 2 to 4 books on different psychology-based books. These books range from Eastern philosophy to sex therapy to specific disorders. I also listen to 3 or 4 self-help / psychology-related podcasts a week, and I've taken to listening to recorded classes from Berkeley. So the basis of my question is really this: how does one make the switch? I don't want to be a psychiatrist, and I've worked with master's-level clinicians before. Can one start with enough studying research, take the GRE, and go straight into a master's program? Do you have to start all over? Do you have any books you'd recommend on a day in the life of a therapist or something? I kind of have envisioned having a practice that does personal therapy and professional coaching. 2. In my quest to better myself, I've been looking into who I am, how I'm perceived, and working on, quote, spots that I think could use some improvement. As a professionally confident person, I have a tendency to end up being seen by my peers as a bit arrogant. This is not really a way that I want to be viewed. I can accept and appreciate being viewed as cocky or confident, but arrogant is such a negative thing. I've looked for books on the subject. I couldn't locate anything specific to it. I moved the search into how to be humble, as I think that humility is a big part of the difference between being arrogant and being confident or cocky. I could not locate anything on that subject that wasn't in the form of accept that God is your superior and you will be humbled, which isn't what I'm looking for either. I finally ended up reading 2 books on narcissism, one of which was awful and the other somewhat useful. Unfortunately, neither of them provided a view on how to change narcissistic tendencies. Again, I really hope this isn't inappropriate, and I hope that you are able to help. Even if you aren't able to respond, my thanks for the insight that you've given me through your podcast. Thank you, Dr. Van Nuys. And this comes from Hunting. And just to quickly answer, how do you get into a graduate school without a background in psychology? I can tell you the way I did it was to take a few remedial courses in psychology and then apply to small, out-of-the-way master's programs. And by using that strategy, I was able to get into a small master's program, do some remedial work there, and then get in. There may be counseling programs. If you're talking about the MA level, that may be somewhat easier to get into. And certainly the idea of doing some volunteer work, which it sounds like you're doing now, that will also help make your case. So just apply to a lot of programs and actually contact the schools that you're interested in. Let them know your situation and see what they would require of you to be considered for admission. As for working on arrogance, I could not think of any specific books. Maybe our listeners will have a suggestion. I do think that Buddhism has something to offer, and it doesn't require that you have a belief, any particular beliefs in God, but I'm talking about meditation, and maybe even the Holosync program that we talked about today would help give you that perspective so that you would be more in control of that attitude that seems to come off as arrogance. So I hope this helps, and as I say, maybe listeners will have some suggestions. Let's move on to another one or two. Here's a short one. Hi, Dr. Dave. I just wanted to tell you that I really enjoyed Raul Moncayo, both on Shrink Wrap Radio and on Wise Counsel Podcast. I'm now very interested in Lacan. Please do more. Thanks, Tracy. Okay, Tracy, I've tried to get Dr. Fink on to do more, and he says he'd be open to doing it maybe 6 or 7 months from now. Here's another one. Hi again, Dr. Dave, my favorite podcasting psychologist. I have a question for you from a curious mind. Have you ever done a podcast on flow, a term coined by psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi? Have you ever interviewed him? I just read about it on a writing article, and is so similar to many Zen philosophies, being in the zone, mindfulness, meditation, and be here now, guru speak, all from an academic psychological point of view. If you have a podcast on this or similar, can you point me to the podcast number for me? Thanks, Dr. Dave. And that comes from Margaret in Sydney, Australia. Well, I'm very familiar with the work of Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. He's part of the whole positive psychology movement. I've assigned one of his books in a class that I taught on human potential, and I have seen him in a film. He has a rather thick accent and a fairly slow style, so I'm just not sure if he would be a dynamic interview here, but I'll keep it in mind. And since we're running long, I'll read just one more. And it goes, Hi, Dr. Dave, I really love the show. The one with Myrtle Heery really took me down a new path in my education. My question for you is, could you recommend any graduate counseling programs with a humanistic perspective? Thank you for your time and all the great podcasts. Sincerely, Andrew. Well, Andrew, most of the programs that I know are here in the Bay Area. What comes to mind is JFK University in San Francisco, the Transpersonal Psychology Institute in Palo Alto, the California Institute of Integral Studies, and Saybrook Institute, which are both Saybrook Graduate School, which are both in San Francisco, and West Georgia State University may also have a program that's of interest to you. If you've been listening to Shrink Wrap Radio for any length of time, you know that I'm a gadget guy. If you're a gadget person or have one in your life, Brookstone.com is one of the best places you can shop. Brookstone isn't just about gadgets, though. They're America's number one retailer of innovative gifts and products for your home office, bedroom, bathroom, kitchen, yard, and more. Brookstone is known for offering an assortment of consumer products that are functional in purpose, distinctive in quality and design, and not widely available from other retailers. We have a Brookstone affiliate link on our site at shrinkwrapradio.com, and clicking on that link will save you 10% off your order, plus helps to support this podcast. Or you can just go directly to brookstone.com and use the discount code SHOWRAP, that's SHOWRAP, at checkout. I think that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave comments in the comments area on the site. You can leave me voicemails on Skype where I'm ShrinkPod. You can use the My Chingo button on our site to make a recording. And you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks to my guest, Bill Harris, for telling us about the origins and uses of Holosync. Next week's guest will be Dr. Sherry Ruth Anderson on women's spirituality and the feminine face of God. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.